when you're letting go of something that you've defined yourself to be, and then potentially leaping into something that you're not even sure of what that is, it's almost like having a separation of yourself. You don't even know how to look at yourself. So you have to almost kind of leap and then look back and say, oh, okay, I can be both the person I was before and the person I am now. We need to include our past, but we need to transcend it. That's like the hardest part of the journey. My fears are that we will continue, and we collectively continue to be more divisive, continue to be more separated, and that we won't find a way to communicate better. And it will continue to exacerbate into conflicts in different areas of the world. My hope is that we start to turn that around. You know, one conversation at a time, people will start to see that life's too short to be playing small, too short to be holding back. And what do we really have to lose?
This episode of the Kintsugi Podcast is brought to you by Pause, Breathe, Reflect, which can help you bring mindfulness to your everyday moments. Hey there, my fellow like-hearted humans. It's Michael, and this is the Kintsugi Podcast, the campfire. Since that very first spark that created fire, we've been sitting around the campfire trying to make sense of the world, sharing stories about our experiences. In our Pause, Breathe, Reflect live meditations, I invite people to imagine they're not on a Zoom, but rather in a circle. And in our circle, there's always space for someone who's not there to be there. In a circle, all eyes can see all eyes. And there's no hierarchy. We're all at the same level as we gather around in our circle or around the campfire. Luckily, we invented the s'more, and that helped make our campfires a bit more delicious, if you will. Well, this week, I invite you to sit with us around the campfire as we listen to another wonderful story of connection from a partner, a husband, a dad, and someone who has found that he's always been creative. Yes, he's an author. We talk about his book, which, full disclosure, there's a bit in his book about me. He's a coach, he's a business leader, but most importantly, he's another one of the like-hearted humans who are putting a beautiful ripple into the world. So if you're ready, settle in to a comfortable position. Take a nice breath in, a slow releasing breath out, and get to know Tony Martinetti. Tony, good to see you.
Good to see you, my friend. It's been a long time.
It's been a minute, as they say.
Yes.
So, how are you?
I'm doing well, recovering from a little bit of being sick. The time of year when a lot of things are going around, but I'm doing well now.
There's a lot going on in the world, so.
Yes.
It's an important question to sit with a little bit longer than normal, because as you know, like in your travels, that question can be very transactional. How you doing? I'm fine. All right, good. Moving on to the business at hand. So I appreciate you at least sharing something about your health, and I'm glad you're on the other side of the sickness. I too headed into the holidays with a little COVID. So it feels good to be on the other side of that.
Yeah.
For the third time. So I'm hoping that 3 is the magic number and I'm done with it. So we'll see.
Let's hope for that for sure, because it is not fun.
Let's hope for that. Yes. Not fun. So I want to set the stage as we get into it. You have your podcast and your book, and with the theme of sitting around a campfire, which I've always loved the imagery in our community here at Pause, Breathe, Reflect. When we do live practices, we look upon ourselves not as a Zoom, but as a great group of like-hearted, not like-minded, like-hearted humans in a circle. So in a circle, as you know, there is great strength. All eyes can see all eyes, and there's no hierarchy. So we all sit around in a circle. For us, the two of us will be around the circle, but for everyone else listening, it's an invitation to join us as we have a conversation about living our best life, a great life, having success, however one wants to define it. And there's plenty of ways to talk about that. I usually let people make up their own definition, as I know you do, but we'll be around a campfire as we have this conversation. So let's start with this. This is a question I always love to ask people. So before sitting down here on our campfire, what's one good thing that's already happened for you today?
One good thing that has happened is as I published this new book, I've realized some central themes about who I am and the work that I do and how the impact that it has on other people. You said one thing, but I think really it's realizing something about myself that I didn't know already.
I love it. I hear in that answer, you are seeing the ripple effect of your work.
Yeah.
So what are you realizing in yourself through this?
The very thing that I desire, the very thing that I was starved for through many years was the thing that I wanted to bring out of other people and to create a platform for. And I think the campfire, you know, as you talked about the imagery, I also love the imagery of Kintsugi because I think it's such a great thing as well. But the campfire is a place where people come and connect and share at a very deep level, not just at the surface. And so for me, I realized that connection is a big part of what I want and what I crave, but not just surface level connection. It's about connecting deeper to understand things at a level that you can't just get through a surface level. In my book, this closing chapter is I talk about how I wanted to create a space where it's called Divergent Minds, Convergent Hearts, and having people come together who have different ideas to come together and talk and have conversations about things that matter, but then leave feeling like they know each other much more, feeling connected. And I think that's really at the center of all of this is just that, is finding ways to connect with people who we don't have to necessarily agree with.
So what I hear in that is that like-heartedness.
Yeah.
For us here, it really is about connecting with like-heartedness rather than like-mindedness. We hear about like-mindedness all the time. You can just go through your LinkedIn feed and see plenty of posts about, hey, we want to collect a bunch of like-minded people. I think what is called for now, and I love that you've referenced this, and it's an invite for people to come in, is if we can come from a good place in our heart, I think we have more patience and maybe acceptance for different mindedness. So then we can have better conversations. And through those conversations, we can have stronger connection. I really appreciate you putting that out into the world.
There's something you shared earlier, which had me thinking, and it's about like, how are we living now? Living with intention is really an important part of this, because intention, I feel like, comes from the heart. You know, it's just a sense of like, my intentions are to be a force of good in the world, and I'm not saying me personally, but let's say if you have an intention of being a force of good in the world, that doesn't mean you have to have all the answers. It just means that you try to take actions that are aligned with an intention that you feel is right. And so I think that's a heart purpose connection, not a mind purpose connection.
I totally agree. And I will also say, because I'm saying it, you are a force of good in the world. So you don't have to say it about yourself. I will say it about you. A little brotherly love to you, because you are. You are putting a powerful ripple into the world with your book, and then really just putting your art and your wisdom out there for other people to soak up, soak in. And I should say, just for transparency, I am in your book. So, but this isn't a promotion for the chapter about me. So we're going to talk about other things. So one thing I want to get to before we get to the book is my wife and I love couple origin stories, because ultimately Kintsugi, the podcast, is about connection. You've already mentioned it, like just feeling connected to yourself, which we'll dive deeper in, and connected with other people's, like true connection. And isn't it amazing how we often coach on the topic that we need most in our lives? That's a whole other category, or maybe a different episode. But we love going back to couple origin stories. So can you share how you and your wife met?
Oh, absolutely. I've known my wife since high school, which is really crazy.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Prom date? Junior, senior prom?
No, actually connected through a friend. One of my friends, I went to an all-boys school, a Catholic school, and I got to know people from all over the place. And one of her friends actually started dating her friend first. And then I got to know her. And before you know it, we connected through a lot of these parties and things we got to go together. So we knew a lot of the same friends. And then eventually it became more serious.
Wow. How about that? I like that. So you weren't necessarily high school sweethearts, but you knew each other.
Yeah. We didn't go to the same high school, but I went to school with someone who knew her from her town. So yeah.
Very cool. And when did you start like really dating? Was that through college or post-college?
It was near the end of high school, but it was all through college. And we didn't get married until 2001.
All right. Wow. So you dated for a little bit, right? So that's pretty cool. That's awesome. I love that.
Yeah.
Oh, well, thanks for sharing that story. It's one topic that one question we ask couples all the time. Like, how'd you guys meet? Like, what's the story?
I love that.
It's so interesting how people come together, and in a lot of ways, when you take a step back, it does bring up a sense of awe, because so many of the stories are so random. It's just like, how the heck did we meet? And like all the gin joints and all the different places, you know, like the universe put us together. It's crazy. And I always love to spend some time just sitting on that question.
It's interesting in general when you think about like how we all have our origin stories, right? And we have joint, like you said, a couple stories. But then there's also, you know, when you have founders and co-founders who come together and start a company, then there's a story there. There's so many different intersections, intertwinings of stories. When, you know, I hear someone say like, oh, I don't have anything to share. I have no story to share. I'm like, you're lying, because there's something behind everything and there's more to share than you're actually willing to explore. It's about slowing down and allowing yourself to really lean into it and see.
Yeah, we all have a story. There's a story within us all. And that's the really cool thing about, you know, doing a podcast and other things that I know you do and then I do, is that we get to hear people's stories. So I did want to ask you to describe who you are, but we're going to put what you do professionally off to the side. So we've already referenced that you're an author and you're a podcast host and the reference to coaching. So putting all that to the side, how would you describe who you are?
There's a few ways that I would, because I contain multitudes, as I say, right? I'm an artist. And that's an identity that I hid for a while because I felt like it was something I couldn't own. But I am one. And I was one as a child, and then I kind of put it aside, and now I've kind of reconnected with that artist inside. You know, when I was younger, I did a lot of painting and drawing, and now I've come back to doing a little bit of painting and glass blowing. And now I just dabble with little things here and there. But it's more about the identity of being an artist that I connect with than anything else.
Yeah, the creativity piece of it, Tony, is that?
Exactly, exactly. And, you know, the freeing nature of allowing yourself to say, I can own that identity. I recently interviewed somebody who was a dancer for most of his life. And, you know, he said that he stopped dancing and then he picked it up again. But I realized that you are a dancer always if you're a dancer once. It doesn't matter if you have no legs, but that nature of who you are is still there. It still exists. And I think that's an interesting thing that you can own. Is that once you've become something, once you understand the language of something like dance or art, then it becomes part of you, like riding a bicycle. You don't lose it. And I think you can relate to that, is that it becomes part of you.
Yeah, it lays down memories that is part of your identity. It may lay dormant for a while, for years, but it's still there. It's always there. And when we have a moment where we can wake up to who we truly are, like all of it, then we can see, oh yeah, I am a dancer or I am creative. And I love the fact that you reference glass blowing. So that's one of my favorite forms of art. So as I travel, I collect glass bowls. I've collected glass bowls from all over the world. I am not a glass blower, but I love the artists who are and just how really like simple ingredients create these beautiful, beautiful functional objects of various colors and various shapes. And you can, yeah, shape it into anything you want it to be. It's just, for me, it might sit on the table. People might look at it and just like, oh, it's just sitting on a table, just a bowl. I'm like, oh, there's a whole story behind that bowl, you know, around where we found it, who created it, where was it, all that jazz.
I also like, I think is really neat about glass. You know, here you are drinking glass, which I think is really cool.
This is a, people can't see this, but this is a hand-blown glass.
It's awesome.
Of a glass works in Martha's Vineyard.
Fantastic. One of my favorite spots. But what I think is really neat about glass is that you can be imperfect about it, or you can be extremely precise, right? You think about glass in terms of like test tubes or things that are used in telescopes. Those things have to be precise. They're refined, or like fiber optic cables. That is precise. But then you look at the more, you know, imperfect glass, which is just like, hey, let's play with colors. Let's just kind of see what we can create. Form and shape just don't necessarily have to be symmetrical. And I think that's the cool thing about it. You're always on the edge of, we'll see what happens. We don't even know what it's going to look like until it's actually done.
Yeah, I love your response. And so appreciate how you're bringing something from your youth back into your current life. And that does speak to connection. So love to start diving into your work and the book. The book starts off with really connection with oneself, with this premise that it's hard to truly connect with others if you're not connected with yourself. And I can be a reductionist when I wish to be. So in a lot of my practice, I will say that it all boils down to the conversation that you're having with yourself or your self-narrative. Because that conversation that we all have, but no one wants to seem, or very few people are willing to publicly announce it, except sometimes you get a TMI on social media with that story. But in the corporate sense, or just a human sense, we all have a conversation with ourselves. And I would love for you to share your perspective of that as we begin this journey and we sit around the campfire as we are doing, around how important that is to finding a way to connect with who we truly are.
Couldn't be more true in terms of resonating with me than anything else. I mean, this is, you know, when I think back to when I started my company, I had this tagline that I used, which was inspiration through honest conversation. And I didn't know that that was where this was all going to lead. But when I think about honest conversation, the first honest conversation you have is with yourself in exploring, you know, what is really true for me? What is it that I really want for myself? And oftentimes we start on this path of going through our careers, going through life based on what others might have expected us to want and what we should have. And then we have to realize, well, what do I want? What do I really want to experience, contribute in life? And that I talked a bit about in my first book, Climbing the Right Mountain. But then, you know, you come to this place where you start to say, well, you know, what is it that I, you know, really need to explore for myself? How do I get to that honesty in the conversation that allows me to see who I really am? Warts and all. I mean, we're not perfect at beings and that's okay. But we also know, you know, what can I do to make changes to go in the direction of what I want to become?
Coming up, Tony and I get vulnerable and share what our inner critic says to us when it shows up. All right, let's take a break. Take a full breath in and a slow releasing breath out. And relax the body as you soak up our conversation. Ah, I hope that felt good. Okay, now that we're a little bit more relaxed, can we be real? I think our morning routines, well, they've gotten a little out of control. You might not have time in the morning to meditate because you're busy doing other things like trying to get to work or getting the kids off to school. And this is where my app, Pause, Breathe, Reflect, comes in, because I built it for busy people with a whole bunch of shorter practices. So if you don't have 10 minutes in the morning to meditate, cool beans. You're human after all. But I bet you have 5 times throughout the day when you have 2 minutes to practice and let go of stress and bring mindfulness to your everyday moments. So today, download Pause, Breathe, Reflect for free and begin to stress less, sleep better, and join a community of like-hearted humans rippling something worth rippling into the world. All right, let's go back to our conversation and celebrate the kintsugi within us all. I love that. Are you willing to be a little vulnerable at this moment in time? Just us two guys, no one else is really listening. It's just us.
Nobody else.
So when your conversation with yourself, it's at its best. And I plan to share too. It's not you in the hot seat. So we're going to go back and forth. So when your conversation with yourself is the best or the healthiest, what does that sound like?
At its healthiest, it's me thinking back and really exploring all the great experiences that I've had and how that has helped to define who I am. I think about the gap to the gap and the gain thinking, which it comes from Dan Sullivan. And I think about how certain events in my life in the moment, I would have thought like, whoa, that's bad. I can't believe I did that. But then I think about it in the context of how that really served me. You know, getting laid off for the first time was a moment of, you know, having, it feels like a gut punch, right? But then you realize that being laid off allowed me to experience the uncomfortableness, that allowed me to lean into the unknown and to experience more of life. So hopefully this answers your question, if you will. But I think for me, when I think about those moments, it's the realization that the more I leap, the more I learn.
Oh, I love that. And yeah, we're going to strike hopefully out, because for me, it's just whatever pops up. Like, there was no perfect answer to that question. So it was whatever was there. And what I heard is part of that really healthy narrative that you have is, man, I've gone through some hard things and I found a way through it. Like, I got punched and I found a way to get back up. So there's some really great kintsugi spirit and energy to that and resilience. So yeah, for me, it's very similar, Tony. So when my conversation with myself is at its best, it is, man, you got a killer story. Like, you went through heck and back and look at the ripple you're putting into the world. And not to get all egotistical, Michael, but just take a moment to soak it in. Pause long enough. Listen to your advice that you preach. Take a moment to soak it in and appreciate it. So that's when it's at its best. So we're going to do the other side of the coin. When your conversation with yourself isn't so great, what does that sound like?
Yeah.
That's it right there. It's yeah. That's the perfect answer right there. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I'll say it. It's just, this is what happens a lot. And I've written a post about this a while back. In fact, I wrote an article in Fast Company about being addicted to doing and that being my undoing. And I think there's a sense of like, I should be doing more, or why didn't I do more? Why am I not doing the right things? And beating myself up about all the things that I coulda, shoulda, you know, woulda done. And the reality is I can't do anything about that. All I can do is move forward and realize that tomorrow is a new day and I get to start again. It's a new me, as they say. You know, I think that's what Marshall used to say, tomorrow you begin again, right? And I think that's really a nice concept, is to say, whatever happened, I get to start tomorrow on a fresh, clean slate and do better.
Yeah, within the field of mindfulness, Jon Kabat-Zinn, but he's not the only one. There's a mantra that basically goes like this, you know, simply begin again. So if you're focusing, say, on your breath and you get distracted, you notice the distraction, come back to your breath and begin again. But what you shared too, Tony, I think afflicts many people, that we're scared not to be always working, always doing. I think there's a real fright out there that if I pause, if only for a moment, I will be left behind, or worse, someone will label me as being lazy.
Yeah, yeah.
So I am going to keep working. And our addiction to work is one of our addictions. It's a way to numb the pain that we don't feel like we can actually just be for a bit and be thoughtful and create some space. So thanks for sharing that.
You're so welcome.
I promise I'll also share. So my voice, when it's not so pleasant, is, your voice doesn't matter, Michael. Who are you kidding? No one's really listening to you. You were never really listened to. So why are you doing all this? Because no one really gives a crap. And it can go on and on. It could get, the show is a clean show, so we're not going to get into like salty language, but that's my voice that leads me to play small and get all hung up in my space. So, and to anyone else listening out there in the listenership, if you want to come on the podcast and come clean with the voice that you're having with yourself, the invite is open to you. But I do appreciate you sharing, joking aside, Tony, because I think it's very common that, you know, folks like us will get on a podcast like this and talk about the concept of that self-talk, but we'll never share what the self-talk sounds like. And here you are, you've had a successful corporate career, you've done a TEDx talk, which I think people should check out, I'll put it in the show notes. You've written a couple different books, you're accomplished as a coach, and still, you have a little inner critic that pops up in your head from time to time, and the same goes for me. And so I appreciate your willingness to share a little bit more, because so many people out there talk about the concept, but never really talk about what it really sounds like. And we all have it. Everybody I know has a little voice in their head that sometimes sounds really magical and beautiful and supportive and all those beautiful adjectives. And sometimes it's like, you become your worst boss ever, and it holds us back from doing our great work and making a connection.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny, even hearing yours, what you shared, it's exactly this. I mean, I feel the same way. I mean, we hear those voices. There's so many different voices that come up. And, you know, when you start working for yourself, it can be really hard because you're trading maybe one boss for another, and you can be your worst boss. Because you can't turn off that voice sometimes.
You can't. And I'll be honest. And this is my 10th year of being on my own as an entrepreneur. And back in my corporate days, I had a team of close to 1,000. And I know that some of the voices that came to me were telling me what they thought I wanted to hear. And some voices were not genuine in telling me that I was amazing. I was doing such a good job and I love working for you. I know some of it was just blowing smoke up my backside. But when I have moments where I feel fragile, I miss some of those comments. Because when you work for yourself, there's no one. Like every now and again, I'm like, will someone just lie to me and tell me I'm doing a good job? Like, just, I know it's a lie. I know it's not truthful, but I just need to hear something that's positive right now, because when you work for yourself, it can feel so lonely, and that loneliness can be deafening. And yeah, it's just, it can be a little rough.
I think we need to invent a for self-employed people, a high five board, a digital high five board where people can go and give high fives for us when we need it.
Just high fives or virtual hugs. Like, you are doing a good job. I think it's like a skit out of Saturday Night Live. But you know what?
Exactly.
Some of that does matter. Some of it works.
We all need champions.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, you've had a chance to interview a lot of wonderful leaders. And as I read through the book, I came away with a couple different categories. And when I examine growth, personal development, some of the same categories pop up, maybe with different labels. So I want to share these with you and just see how they resonate with you to see if I'm on the same page with you. And I was hoping we could talk a little bit deeper about each one, just to give the folks listening an idea of how they might implement more of this quality into their life. With kintsugi, when the pottery breaks, it's put back together with something called urishi, which is the lacquer, and it's dusted with gold, and that's how it creates that golden repair look. So I see these categories as part of the mixture that mixes up the urishi that puts the pottery back together. So one category was all about challenge, about facing obstacles, anticipating the unexpected, fail fast, fail forward, embracing failure, shifting our relationship with it. So that's one, just challenge. Another one is community. Who are you with? My language, who's in your peloton? Who are you riding with in life?
Yes.
There was a theme around courage. And with that, if we pull from Brené Brown, vulnerability, but the concept of courage. So I had this beautiful thematic C themes going, right? Challenge, community, courage, and then it blew up on me. The fourth one is perspective. Like, how do we see things? How do we see ourselves? How do we see each other? How do we see the situation? And when these four are strong, it puts us in the best position to grow. So I serve that up, and I would love to get your reaction of my distilling your work down to four categories to see if I'm on the right page.
Well, it's brilliant, honestly. I love the way you kind of look at that because, you know, first of all, I have my own C's in the book, which are mentioned connection, curiosity, and compassion. And I think when I think about what you're sharing here, it's really a great way to organize the stories because there are different ways people are navigating these journeys they're on and how they're facing their obstacles, whether it be a challenge or whether it's through community. And perspective is also, we have to have a shift in perspective at times to figure out, what does this truly mean? How do I take the meaning out of this? At least that's how I interpret what you said. The perspective shift is like this idea of, what does this mean and how can I take meaning out of it to move forward from here? And I think that's really at the core of all of those different, what I call flashpoints, these points in our journey that have revealed our gifts, is that we need to go inside, reflect on, what is this? How do I make meaning out of it? And how do I take that as a point of moving forward, not just, you know, staying where I am and expecting different results? And I think that the perspective is probably the overarching, and then the other three C's are actually underneath it, because you need to have some perspective on all of those scenarios.
I like how you frame that. So thanks for adding on to my breakdown of your book, because I would agree, like, perspective is that umbrella, like how we see ourselves, how we see each other, how do we see the situation? The classic question I was given, as you know, as I was going through my recovery, was, is this happening for you, Michael, or is it happening to you?
Yeah.
Now, to be fair, that question came a little bit too soon. I wasn't ready for it. I was like, some questions that are thought-provoking or challenging, they need the right timing to be able to help the person that we're sharing it with process it. So, but I do like that perspective, which really speaks to awareness. So once I have awareness through mindfulness, you can gain greater awareness. Then how do I formulate a plan to respond to this challenge? Who's around me to help me? Because I can't do this by myself. And it's going to take some courage, because if we're going to grow at all, it means that we're shedding something. And that can get scary. You know, the community out there that's all about no fear, I'm like, hey, just saying, fear helped us evolve. Like,
exactly.
I'm fearful of certain things, and I feel really good about that fear. And there are some things that I'm fearful of that I try to dance with it differently and change my relationship with it.
Well, it's just to come back to what I was saying earlier about identity, like choosing your identities of who you are. When you're letting go of something that you've defined yourself to be, and then potentially leaping into something that you're not even sure of what that is, it's almost like having a separation of yourself. You don't even know how to look at yourself. And so it's not that you understand it in that while you're going through it. You only understand it by looking back once you've already made the move. So you have to almost kind of leap and then look back and say, oh, okay, I can be both the person I was before and the person I am now, but I have to understand how to integrate them. And that's why I often talk about this transcend and include as a concept that comes from Ken Wilber, is because we need to include our past, but we need to transcend it. But that's like the hardest part of the journey, is this transcending, because we have to be able to make the leap first into this new world that we're navigating into, which is probably the hardest thing to understand. And in many ways, just like the word leap is about going without even knowing what it's going to be that I'm getting into and whether it's going to even work.
I'm glad you brought this up as you were sharing, Tony. What came to mind is Steve Jobs' commencement speech. I think it was 2015 from Stanford, widely shared on the internet. And he talks about you can only connect the dots looking backwards. And I've written about this. So, you know, Steve Jobs, he was a bright man. He's done some good in the world. I think he also didn't realize what he was building too. I think there's a little like Frankenstein thing going on a little bit, just saying. But that whole notion, and this is what you just pointed to, was the importance of looking back. For me, sometimes that's called reflection, to connect those dots to realize, wow, I'm here now because of all my lived experiences. Now, what Jobs says in the commencement speech is that you can only connect the dots looking backwards. So my beef with him is the word only.
Yeah.
Because to your point, we have to find a way to leap to the next dot. And we don't know if that's the right dot.
100%. Yeah.
Especially go back to our childhood and we did connect the dot puzzles. That was part of the challenge, is that you got to connect the next dot and you don't know if that's the right dot. And sometimes that leads to a dead end. And then your picture looks all like not so pleasant and wonky. So that whole courage piece to connect and leap to the next dot is such an important part of the mix. And one question I really wanted to talk to you about was, here we are today in 2024. You have interviewed over 200 people on your podcast. You've written this great book. You've been part of Marshall Goldsmith, who is an executive coach that a lot of executive coaches look up to. So you've been in his incubator and his community. There are plenty of books about leadership and culture, and you know, you put stuff out there, I put stuff out there. So there's a lot of knowledge and wisdom out there. But here today, we still struggle. We still struggle with making work work better. We still struggle with leadership and building great culture and personal growth and all that jazz. And as we sit around the campfire, you know, it's sort of time to make a s'more now, because, you know, I'm a sucker for a good s'more. From your perspective, and we don't necessarily have to have the answer, but what's going on? We don't have a lack of knowledge and wisdom and information, but it doesn't seem to be translating into taking us up, as cliche as this sounds, to the next level. And maybe I'm too close to it, and we could say, well, really, no, we are better. And I think one could safely say, I'll take this back, that we are better today than, say, where we were in 1910.
Sure.
Right? But it doesn't seem, with the wealth of information out there, we don't seem to have the same type of percentage increase in leveling up as we do knowledge, if that makes sense. And I would love for you to ponder this and share your thoughts based on the work that you do?
Yeah. Well, two things come to mind for me around this. And again, this is just, you know, an opinion, but it's just the thought that I had. Number one is I feel like sometimes we have misaligned incentives, misaligned motivations that even though we start off with the right intentions, the incentives start to move us in a different direction. And I mean, especially for leaders, when they feel as though, okay, well, I know the right thing to do, but the thing that is going to get the results that other people, other stakeholders want is something else, then there's misalignment around what to do and how to act in the moment. So it's hard to stay on the right path. So that's one part of it. And the other part is a word that we've been kind of touching on the whole time is connection. You know, connection seems like a really hard thing for people to grasp, that we need to be connected with other people in order to understand their what they want, what drives them, what's their, you know, what's important to them. But the more we get to know each other, the more likely we can move forward better together. If we stay in our own little bubbles, we stay just connected to what we want, then what happens is we're going to make decisions based on just our own myopic view of the world. The more connected we get, the more we have conversations with people, especially people who are different than us, then the more likely we can get to a solution that allows us to open up the aperture and see what's possible. So I think there's a sense of both of them working in concert that creates it's hard for us to get where we need to go. And I think it's making it harder the more that technology and things that have come together, it's hard because it's separating us, even though it's connecting us.
Yeah, it's social media is a connector, but ultimately a disconnector. We go to the edges because the algorithm shows us the edges and how different we are from each other versus how similar we are. Because if we talk about how similar we are, then everyone's like, yeah, okay, that's good. I get that. But when we show the differences that we have, it's like, yes, it feeds a different system in our body. And I do agree, like that misalignment in incentives from shareholders through the junior employee, it's not matching. So then a lot of the stuff in between can sound like corporate speak, especially around, you know, our values and what we're all about. And, you know, well, they're producing, even though they're bad for our culture, but they're producing, we're going to just look the other way. And then a lot of people will look at that and say, well, what gives? Like, does it pay to be the nice guy or the nice gal because you see this behavior? And as long as you're producing, you can get away with whatever. And to the point around connection and technology, the faster we go, the harder it is to connect.
Exactly.
The harder it is to see and hear and appreciate each other because we're going so quickly. Our vision changes, our hearing changes, and we're at this low hum of fight and flight all the time. I think that's sort of where, not to paint with too broad of a brush, where society is this low level, constant stress. And we either deny it, push against it, or try to numb it away, as opposed to really dealing with it. If we don't deal with it, it's hard to connect with ourselves, going back to our first topic, and therefore almost impossible to truly connect with each other. Because if I connect with you and you have a different perspective, then I have to be comfortable in my own skin and be curious with you because I might not be right and my ego doesn't like that.
It's interesting. I've been thinking about this concept of, like, you know, on social media, we have like buttons, we have love buttons and all these different buttons that we, you know, we put on posts. But there's got to be something else that allows us to say, I'm curious, and I'm curious button, because it's the button that you press when you can say, I'm curious, I want to know more about this. It's not that I agree or disagree. I just want to know more about this. And so that it raises the bar, because I feel like oftentimes liking something says that you agree with it.
Yes.
But that doesn't necessarily have to be the case. And I think there's also a sense of, this is maybe a different stream of thought, but I'll go there because it's just coming to mind, is that we have to follow the money, right? I even think about, like, all of the media that we consume, and I'm not here to bash media, but a lot of it comes to what makes money. What gets published is often what makes money. And so All that being said, it's like, if you follow the money, you follow where the incentives are for people to do more of that. And I think that's the issue that we have to be dealing with here, is how do we ensure that we have a good level thinking in not just what we consume from a media perspective, but who we listen to? How do we interact and connect with other people? And as leaders of companies, it's so important to make sure that you don't have a closed box. It has to be an open box.
Absolutely.
Of people who have different ideas and thinkings, who are not going to hit the like button. Instead, they'll be hitting the curiosity button and say, I'm curious. Tell me more.
And from there, maybe a better question. So that gets to creating a culture of inclusion, or the word we use now, belonging, because it feels like, all right, no, I deserve a seat at this table. I can ask a question of curiosity. I can challenge the status quo. I can challenge that notion. Well, this is the way we've always done it. And I think that's the really cool thing about new generations coming into the workplace. So as we, you know, round out the campfire, we have to be the proper stewards of a campfire, because we have to extinguish it in a very healthy way. So I have a few other questions. One, I want to go back to some of these categories that we talked about. It can either be your C's or my C's, but how can folks take what you've discovered through your interviews and through your book and sort of begin again in the new year, if you will? Where would you have people start? And maybe some really practical small steps to really create more connection for themselves and with each other. What recommendations would you have for folks?
Well, I guess the starting point is to take, let's try this, the three C's that I use as a starting point. And I think it's curiosity, compassion, and connection are important, because when you get curious about yourself, get curious about your story, get curious about where you've coming from, and understand your past a little bit, and don't just rush through this process. Maybe there's parts of yourself that you're holding back, that you're not really connected with, that you want to start sharing more of. And through that connection that you're creating with yourself, maybe that'll open up the connection to other people. And the compassion piece of this is to say, be compassionate with yourself. Don't get down on yourself about potential dark parts of your past that you feel like, I don't want to go back there. Think about, what were the powerful parts of this? What was the things you can appreciate being on the other side of that thing? Even if you're still going through a dark period, know that you are a human being who can do tough things, but also you need time to rest and reflect. So I think that's a good starting point, is to start to use those C's as a way to look at your past. And then once you've done that, start thinking about how you want to use that as fuel for your future.
I like that. Thanks for sharing, Tony.
You're welcome.
So when you look at 2024, since we're sitting here during the early days of the new year, what fears and hopes do you have for the year ahead?
Well, I'll start with the fears, because I want to end on a positive note. My fears are that we will continue, and we collectively continue to be more divisive, continue to be more separated, and that we won't find a way to communicate better in the year ahead and beyond. And it will continue to exacerbate into conflicts in different areas of the world. My hope is that we start to turn that around. You know, one conversation at a time, one person at a time. If you start with yourself and say, you know, what is one person in my life that I haven't had a conversation with that I need to have a conversation with? Where am I holding back because I'm afraid to have that conversation? So I think my hope is that people will start to see that life's too short to be playing small, too short to be holding back. And what do we really have to lose?
Great question. What do we really have to lose? Not much. So,
no.
And we can find great connection and be with like-heartedness. So here's the final question. It's in the spirit of a show that I don't think airs anymore, but it's called Inside the Actor Studio. Do you remember the show?
Oh, yes. I can't remember the host's name, but he was a character.
James Lipton.
Yes.
He would ask the actors a few questions at the end. And so this is a paraphrase of one of the questions he serves up. So let's assume that heaven exists. And when you pass away, when you get to heaven, you get to meet your elders, the people who came before you. What do you hope they'll say to you when you meet them again?
Yeah. Wow. That's very real for me. And I'll just say it because, like, you know, both my parents have passed and my grandparents. So I'm pretty much an orphan at this point in my life. And I'm hoping that they'll say to me that you've made us so proud with the way that you've shown up, the impact that you've had on people. And it didn't have to be some game-changing thing. It just had to be, you know, making one person's life different because of how you've shown up. And they're proud of what I carried on in terms of being a person who makes other people feel valued.
That's great. Is there anything I didn't ask you about that you wanted to speak to?
Wow. There isn't anything really. You touched on pretty much all, so many things. I guess the only thing I would say is that I'm so honored by what you do. And I'm so thrilled that we had the opportunity to connect on our journeys, because I think things happen for a reason. And, you know, I just wanted to say, I really appreciate you and what you do.
That's received. Thank you, Tony. And I will say this as we end. One, thanks for coming on. And you are a powerful force of energy in the world. You're making a difference. In that spirit of Kintsugi, you're helping people reconnect, and through that reconnection, see their strength and celebrate their golden symbols of resilience. And we need more people like you in the world. So I appreciate what you're doing. And again, thanks for being on.
Thank you so much.
I love a good campfire, don't you? Bring out a few blankets. Perhaps the night sky is clear so you can see the stars and the moon. Perhaps you have your favorite beverage. And of course, that aforementioned s'more to cap off a beautiful evening. And it's all connected through conversation and moments of silence. Because you can truly know about the people who bring out the best in you when you can sit in silence with them and simply be. As you might know, here on the Kintsugi podcast, I like to guide a short meditation, just a couple minutes long, based on what our guest has shared with us. So for this practice, I invite you to visualize that we're sitting around a campfire. So when you're ready, come into a comfortable position. If you happen to be driving, please keep your eyes open. For everyone else, you can close them. And we'll drop in. And we'll begin by taking a few generous inhales of the cool night air. Feeling your lungs expand. And then slowly releasing the breath, coming into this moment. And begin to visualize that you're around our campfire. And with you at this campfire are the people who bring out the best in you. And you bring out the best in them. It might be just one or two people. It might be more. You notice the stars in the sky, the crackling of the fire, the coolness of the air, and the connection to the people around you. Knowing that you don't need to say anything to feel this connection, to be part of this community. All right. Nice job. When you feel ready, you can begin to ease your attention. Maybe wiggle those beautiful fingers and toes and give your body a little stretch. And if you like, you may wish to reach out to the people you visualized during the meditation to let them know you've been thinking about them today. And now it's time, as we end this episode of the Kintsugi Podcast, to put out our fire in a safe manner and thank Tony once again for the ripple he's putting into the world. Tony, we appreciate you. Keep rippling what you're rippling into the world, because the world needs your energy. Also, I'd like to give a shout out to the like-hearted humans at SaaSPod that make the Kintsugi Podcast sound so great and help it ripple into all corners of this big blue marble that we all share. And now, I want to thank you for listening and supporting the Kintsugi Podcast. And if you want to go above and beyond in your support, I could certainly use a kind rating, a review, subscribing, or sharing, because it does something to the algorithm that I don't completely understand. But when you engage in this way, it helps others find our like-hearted community. If you've already done so, thank you for the extra support. And if you haven't done so yet, today might be a really good day to do so. And if you'd like to receive some additional resources that can help you connect with yourself and others, like my Better Life Workbook and the inspirational text messages I send throughout the week, and of course, our Pause, Breathe, Reflect meditation app, I'll put those links in our show notes. And remember, between now and next week's story of connection, when you have a challenging moment, slow down, come back to your breath. You know that you've got this, and we've got you. And together, we will ripple something worth rippling into the world. I love you for listening, and I hope to see you next week. Until then, toodaloo.